Now Monitor brings you Meet the Press, the prize-winning interview program produced by Lawrence E. Spivak. Three of America's top news reporters are ready for this spontaneous, unrehearsed news conference. Here's the moderator of Meet the Press, Ned Brooks.
Welcome once again to Meet the Press. Our guests are the three presidents of the European Community, whose members are France, West Germany, Belgium, the Netherlands, Italy, and Luxembourg. Representatives of these three nations are working toward an economical and political integration with the ultimate goal, a United States of Europe. With a population close to that of the United States, the six nations have an economic potential as great as that of the Soviet Union. Our government has encouraged the European Community as one of the bulwarks against communism. The three presidents came to the United States on an official visit. And now meet our guests, Dr. Walter Hallstein, president of the Economic Community, former law professor, former Secretary of State for Foreign Affairs for West Germany. Next, Mr. Etienne Hirsch, president of the Atomic Energy Community, former chief economic planner for the French government. And Mr. Paul Finet of Belgium, president of the Coal and Steel Community, one of the leaders in the trade union movement of Europe. Now seated around the press table, ready to interview our guests today, are Marquis Childs of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Edwin Dale of the New York Times, Max Friedman of the Manchester, England Guardian, and Lawrence E. Spivak, our regular member of the Meet the Press panel. Panel members, you may direct your questions to any of our guests. They are here to answer and also to observe. Now, gentlemen, if you're ready, we'll start the questions with Mr. Spivak.
President Hallstein, there have been many reports to the effect that Dr. Adenauer changed his mind about giving up the chancellorship because he was afraid that Dr. Earhart would be cool towards the common market. Would you be concerned about the success of the common market if Dr. Earhart became chancellor?
No, I wouldn't. Dr. Earhart has immense merits for the recovery of the economy of Western Germany, and I have no doubt that as he has done as Minister for Economic Affairs of Western Germany, he would always be most helpful in bringing about the biggest success for European integration.
Well, now, in April of this year, Dr. Earhart suggested a 17-nation free trade area. What would the effect of such an area in Europe have on the common market?
I think it's absolutely in the line of the basic philosophy of the common market to extend the advantages of a liberal commercial policy to other European countries. And there is agreement among the six governments that some sort of association should be brought about to the effect to have them participate in these advantages.
You, I would take it, would be for such a free trade area then?
Our commission came out the 1st of March of this year with a memorandum dealing with the matter. And there we have pronounced our own opinion that we are looking for a way to solve the problems of such an association.
Well, tell me, Dr. Hallstein, why is it then that there have been so many charges in Europe and in England particularly that the common market is splitting Europe into two hostile plans, one is your common market and the other is another common market that England is trying to form with some of the Scandinavian countries?
That is because many people are overrating the consequences of a different treatment of states inside and states outside of our community. I just got the last figures on foreign exchange of the community, commercial exchange, trade of the community countries with the countries outside, and they clearly show a big increase of imports in the community countries during the first quarter of this year. Much bigger increase of imports out of the OEC countries into the community countries than vice versa.
I might understand then that you do not believe that another common market group would do your common market group any damage?
Certainly not.
Mr. Friedman.
President Hirsch, what can the United States do now to promote greater cooperation with the atomic energy community in developing the peaceful uses of atomic energy?
Well, as you know, there is already an agreement between our community and the United States. This agreement is starting to work in effect. And that is an agreement which is not only to help the community, but it is also meant to help the United States. That is, it works both ways. The amounts of money which are appropriated on each side for the development of research are equal. The results will be available both to the United States and to the community countries. On the development of power plants, we have received a few weeks ago letters of intent from the public utilities who state that they intend to make use of the facilities which will be granted to them on getting special fuel and some facilities. When they are in operation, the results, both technical and economical, will be available to all members of the community and at the same time to the United States.
Do your European scientists want more information from this country?
Certainly. I think all scientists are very keen of getting most information possible. So as soon as any information can be made available, it is of universal use, and that helps progress.
Mr. Dale.
I'd like to address this to President Finet. Our impression here is that the coal and steel community failed to meet its first real test of the supranational idea, and that came up over the coal surplus crisis this year. Is it true, Mr. President, that the members in the end voted for their own national interests rather than follow the recommendations of the high authority of which you are the head? Is that the case, Monsieur Finet?
I don't dare to say that is because some survivance of nationalism that the Sixth Government accepted the proposal put forward by the high authority. And I think that the Sixth Government, don't forget that the engagement that I make in ratifying and in the application of the treaty. But it seems to me that the Sixth Government don't agree about the basic idea of the high authority. And the French government and the German government were seeking that it was not a general crisis in coal industry, but it was only located to one country.
And well, that Belgium country, is that?
That country is Belgium. But it was the rule of the treaty that before making and taking some measure, the high authority must get the agreement of the Sixth Government.
Do you expect it to be easier to get the agreement of the governments in some future test than it was this time?
I don't know, do you see? You are asking me to make some prophecy, but I am unable to do that.
Mr. Childs.
President Hallstein, does the fact that the common market includes West Germany, while East Germany is a part of the Soviet economic empire, mean in effect acceptance of the permanent division of Germany?
By no means.
But doesn't it become very much more difficult to unite Germany? And isn't it a fact that if Germany were united and in the common market, Germany would have the preponderance of economic power?
No. either one nor or the other.
I think the chances of bringing about German reunification are improved by the work of European integration. The stronger Europe becomes, the better are the chances of coming to an agreement on the East-West problems, of which the German reunification is a very important one.
But doesn't that mean the stronger that Western Europe becomes the common market, the less likely the Russians are to surrender their hold on East Germany?
Well, nobody can say today what conditions must have materialized until the Russians will come to a point that they agree with the reunification of Germany. But it is certain that certain things have to change until we have reached this point.
In your treaty, you say it will take 12 to 15 years to bring the common market into being. Would you anticipate that Germany would be reunified before that date, President Hallstein?
It goes beyond all capacity of prophecy to say when the time will be reached. I wouldn't dare saying anything concrete on that.
But you don't think a divided Germany is any handicap for the common market whatsoever?
I don't think so, no.
Mr. Spivak.
President Hirsch, as I understand it, all three of you presidents are strongly for a united Europe and look forward eventually to a political unification of the six countries involved in the European community. Is that true?
That is absolutely true. I can say for myself and certainly for my colleagues that we would never have accepted such a job, which is not an easy one, if we didn't do that in order to accelerate the unification of Europe. And this process has started. We have great confidence on achieving. We can't prophesy in how long a real United States of Europe.
Well, Mr. Hirsch, do you think there's much chance that the European community will achieve political integration in the face of France's rising nationalism?
You know, there are, ebbs. Things move, ups and downs, things move. And we must not only look at what is happening today. We must see the trends as they are. And I am quite confident that the younger generation in France knows that the only hope for giving to our culture for which we stand, which is so important in Europe, to give it the chance of surviving and not having what happened to Greece, is to unite.
Well, are you suggesting then that President de Gaulle's France is an ebb?
Well, I think the judgments which are made of President de Gaulle's position are simplified. General de Gaulle, contrary to what was expected from him as soon as he came into power, made a very clear statement that the treaties as they were signed would be applied. And up to the present, we have no single sign that this is not the fact.
Mr. Hallstein seems to have a comment on this.
May I add perhaps one remark concerning this point? I think it's not quite correct, or at least not quite complete, to say that economic integration, as we represent it here, is only a step towards political integration. It is already the beginning of political integration for that reason that it does not only consist of abandoning trade barriers, but at the same time policies which so far have been isolated state policies have merged. The very existence of our treaty and of our communities is the functioning of common community policies.
Well, when you speak of an integrated political unity, do you really mean a United States of Europe in the sense that we have the United States here in America, where you will have one political head and you will have a Congress that deals for all of them, President Hallstein?
I think it's premature to say today what specific form political, complete political unification of Europe would take. But we have already a structure, a setup of institutions which are quite similar to any federal structure. We have the executive branch as it is represented by our commissions. We have a judiciary, sort of Supreme Court. We have a European Parliament, quite different from the national parliaments. And we have a Council of Ministers where the states' rights find expression and are represented.
Yes, but you have to have a fading away of nationalism, don't you, in order to get the political integration that you're looking for.
We have it already, Mr. Spivak. Otherwise, we would never have come as far as we have come.
In the face of what Prime Minister Debray of France, for example, said, where there is no nation, where there is no fatherland, there is no freedom.
But Prime Minister Debray has accepted these communities as a living reality, and he has solemnly confirmed the decision of his government to respect and to execute the treaties. And if I am right, I hope I am, that these treaties are already part of a political structure, then we have already the actual support of the French government of such a policy.
Mr. Friedman.
President Hallstein, you referred to the common market's desire to reduce the barriers to trade. But isn't there a great danger that the community will discriminate against the trade of all other countries?
It depends on what one understands by discrimination. If two people marry, of course, all others are discriminated in a way. You cannot admit, as we do, and as even the GATT rules do, the rules of this worldwide agreement on trade and custom and tariffs, if we agree that it is possible to form a customs union, we accept already the idea that it is lawful to make a distinction between the treatment of people living inside this community and people living outside. So, practically, your question, Mr. Friedman, leads to the point where we have to ask ourselves, what will the external, what will the commercial policy of that community be?
And what's your answer to that question?
There are two answers. One answer is given by the treaty itself, because the treaty commits all the institutions of the community to lead a liberal trade policy. And there is another point. Even if there were no commitment of this sort in our treaty, we had to lead a liberal policy because we depend on trade. We are, as you know, mainly a manufacturing area. We need imports. We need imports of raw materials, and we need exports in order to give work to do to our own labor. Therefore, we cannot even exist without
one last
free
question.
Exchange of.
As a practical matter, what is the community doing right now to deal with the problem of monopolies and cartels?
We have to pass some additional legislation. We have already rules on competition, free competition, and rules against the cartels and monopolies in our treaty, but they are not complete. We have to rely on some additional legislation in the six countries. Some of them have it already. Some have not, and we some time ago passed a suggestion, an invitation to three of our six governments to go on with this legislative effort in order to make the legal basis for this effort complete.
Mr. Dale.
I'd like to pursue with President Hallstein this idea of the external tariff of the common market. Is it correct first to say that the outcome of that is still not known? We do not know how high a tariff against American goods, for example, there will be 10 or 12 years from now. Is that correct?
Partly yes, partly no, Mr. Dale. It is correct insofar as we do not have for every single item the exact tariff. But we do have an indication what will be the scale of this tariff, because we are all committed to stick to what we have been committed by the GATT rules. We are only allowed, according to the GATT rules, to bring about a customs union if the external tariff of the whole community is not higher than the average tariffs of the six so far separated national units. Wow. And we have lived up to this commitment. Our treaty indeed foresees a level of tariffs which is exactly defined by this rule. It is, in as a matter of fact, even lower.
Now, as I understand it, in the fall of 1960, next year, your community will begin to negotiate with the Americans, using our authority under the reciprocal trade law, to get that level of tariffs even lower. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And if we are able to negotiate you downward, then this new lower level will apply to the whole world. Is that
indeed
correct?
Indeed.
Now, do you anticipate significant reductions in tariffs of the six as a result of these negotiations? Are you looking toward that, or are you going to try to keep those to a minimum?
It certainly does not depend entirely on us, because a tariff negotiation is always a give and take. As far as we are concerned, we are perfectly willing to bring the tariffs down as much as we can.
Mr. Childs.
President Hallstein, it's been said that the attraction of the common market is so great that within a year to a year and a half, even though you make no moves at all, Britain and the six other countries who are outside the common market will have to join up with you. Do you believe that's true?
It's difficult to say, Mr. Childs, because, as you know, joining the common market means abandoning parts of national sovereignty. And the main difficulty we have run into during the former negotiations, the Paris negotiations in the framework of OEC, when we tried to bring about a free trade area, was just this one, that our partners in this conversation have not been willing to accept such rules whereby they lose part of their autonomy with respect to foreign trade.
Well, I wondered if you could tell me what steps you in the common market are taking to try to resolve the conflict with the British, which seems fairly acute.
We are just now proceeding on a pragmatic way. That is to say, we have extended immediately after the coming into being of the first lower tariffs in our community, these advantages to a high degree, not absolutely to a degree of 100%, but to a very high degree, to our partners in the OEC, to the other European countries, and by way of the most favored nations clause extended to other countries as well.
Would you say that the future of the common market depends on resolving this conflict, or can you go ahead regardless of what happens to the British and the other six?
I would say personally, and I think I said it already a minute ago, that good development of the common market highly depends on a liberal policy of the common market. And this with respect not only to our European neighbors, but to all other trading units in the world as well.
Mr. Spivak.
I'd like to direct this question first to President Hirsch and then to President Finney after I've had President Hirsch's answer. You already have a surplus of coal and unemployment in the coal industry in your community. Isn't this going to be made worse as you begin to develop more and more atomic energy?
I would say that the problem of the atomic energy is not for tomorrow. The new power plants, which will come into operation, won't come into operation before 1964. In the meantime, we hope, and we will do our best with the various governments, to increase economic expansion. The problem of coal at present is largely due, partly, but largely due to the fact that economic expansion has not followed the pace which we enjoyed during the last 10 years. So that we foresee that in 20 years' time, for instance, with economic expansion, we will require four times as much electricity.
I'm sorry that I'm going to have to interrupt. I see that our time has run short. Our thanks to all the three presidents of the European community for being with us.
And Monitor's thanks, too, to Dr. Walter Hallstein, Monsieur Etienne Hirsch, and Mr. Paul Finet.